Last week on the Lords of Grantham podcast, we talked The Crown Season 6, Episode 3. In that episode, we saw the final days of Princess Diana and her boyfriend, Dodi Al-Fayed, and everything leading up to their tragic ending. And so this week, we're talking Season 6, Episode 4, the aftermath of that, and everything that follows that tragic event. Here we go.
And we're back for a little bit of aftermath. Season 6, Episode 4 of The Crown. What's going on, Corey?
Just a lot of work. Just really underwater at work. How about you, Dave?
I was almost underwater. I was below the sea level. I was in Louisiana.
Oh, you're the Big Easy.
Yeah, I just got back yesterday evening. So, you know, I don't think this will radically affect our release schedule, but we're recording a little late.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about your trip at the end of the pod, but are you feeling relaxed? Are you feeling like ready to talk about the aftermath of last week's Crown?
I mean, I think everything is easier to deal with than last week's Crown.
Okay. All right.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. If you listen to our episode, you know how I felt about that. So it was the one with the dying, you know, this is the one after the dying.
Yeah, trying to be optimistic about it.
Yeah. Any news in our shows? I know we were talking right before we hit record. You got to check.
Yeah, well, there's been some early talk about the new season of Bridgerton that's coming out very shortly. Because I think that comes out next month in May, May 16th. The first four episodes will land May 16th, and the second four to follow on June 13th. Yeah, there's going to be a lot more sex scenes in this coming season, it appears. They're bringing it back. I think people, I think they may have saw that maybe viewership declined a little bit in the second season, because from what I heard, we didn't cover it. But there was fewer sex scenes, and now this season there's going to be threesomes and oral, and yeah.
What?
Get excited. Hey, that's Bridgerton, man. This ain't The Crown.
We've been recording for 2 minutes, and this is kind of stuff is coming out.
I'm just saying. If you're ready for more Bridgerton, get excited.
I think the spoon scene in season one is enough oral for any show.
I didn't read any details beyond that. I just saw the word and
well, we didn't. And said I mean, it. This puts us in a bit of a pickle, and I don't mean anything about the love scenes that are added because we didn't watch season two because people didn't in the moment, and I think there's revisionist history going on.
Yeah.
That people did not like season two. People were like, screw Bridgerton. We're done with Bridgerton. Queen Charlotte, it was a standalone, so it was easy for us to jump back in. I'm scared we're gonna have a... If this season is back, we're back with the world, we're going to be so far behind the ball. I feel like we might be better off just being like, sorry, Bridgerton. We tried. We couldn't do it.
We had the coffee creamer. You let us know. And maybe we just do it in true Lords Grantham fashion. We just jump into season three without watching season two, and then we go back to season two after we finish season three.
I mean, we could. I don't want.
Okay.
The thing is, if it's a linear story, and our Crown listeners are like, stop talking about Bridgerton. It's all on Netflix. Where Netflix pays us, if only.
Yeah.
If the linear plot from season one to season three... If it was like Queen Charlotte, where we didn't need to watch season two, I could care less. But I feel like there's enough moving pieces with the whistle down of it all. And
well, I mean, that's the question, too, is just after we complete The Crown, what is next? I know we got a little while before we get there, but, you know, open to suggestions, too. If you don't want us to watch Bridgerton, tell us what you'd like us to maybe go towards next. I know... We've heard many times, like, oh, Outlander, oh, Call the Midwife. Both of those shows are...
No, Call the Midwife.
Well, even Outlander, they're like 80, 90 episodes. We're going to be doing this till we're like old men if we do that on a weekly basis.
All Creatures Great and Small has come onto the table.
Okay.
But we'll get there when we get there. We might just have to change the format of the podcast and not commit ourselves to a full show. Just commit ourselves just to jump seasons. Around.
Okay. Just
basically stay on the line for new seasons of Gilded Age and potentially Belgravia.
Yeah.
And well, and in the middle, do whatever. But we're too far off course.
Yeah.
We need well, to get one back more piece on of news. Course.
No, what? No, no. More let's go off course one more time. So at the you know Poldark, you know the where they always film at the shore at the, by the beach, human bones were found by hikers this past week. This is at Dunraven Bay.
Free traders?
I don't know. Dunraven Bay in the Vale of Glamorgan. Vale of Glamorgan. They filmed Doctor Who there as well. There is human bones that were found there. Which makes me wonder too, like were these bones there when they're actually filming the TV show? Like, did someone just not notice? Like, yeah, that's
Aiden
a skull
Turner
over
got
there.
Into a fight with somebody and launched him off the side.
Could be, yeah. Ross Poldark got in a mood. So yeah, watch your step if you're going to go for tourist sightseeing of where Poldark was filmed or Doctor Who.
Okay.
Now on to the Crown.
Now on to the follow up to the. Saddest moment in modern, well, in modern royal history,
yes.
Yes. The biggest tragedy of the royal family.
Tragedy is the right word, yeah. Because some may argue that Queen Elizabeth passing is even more sad for some people, depending on
but
how
she
you...
Once you crack 80, it's not a true tragedy.
Yeah, people love the Queen. I mean... Put it to the listeners too. What's just sadder, Diana or Queen Elizabeth?
I mean, I don't think it's a disputable. I mean, unless you hate Diana,
right? Exactly. That's the thing. And there are people out there who are that kind of. They have those feelings. I don't know.
Elizabethans.
Yeah. Well, they feel like she's not even royal too. So we can even say that, you know, there's that argument. Is she royal enough to be qualifying in that conversation?
Well,
I don't know.
That's the thing that comes up this week. But we start the episode with the phone calls.
Yes, word is getting out. It's a call from Paris. It's Phil who actually gets the news first, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the accident, it's serious. We learned that Dodi Fayed died instantly, and Diana is in severe shape.
Yep, we see Mohammed get the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
He gets on the move. He's the first one to go.
Yeah, he beelines there.
Which raises the question to me, and this is again why we're this show is this show and has its controversy. Why did he set those two up to go to his little estate and tell them it was a villa for a happy married couple and do that on the phone if he's like a helicopter rides away?
Because he's trash. I mean, that's the thing.
What a heel turn.
He just
and
likes
I think,
to manipulate
I think when
people.
We get to the end of the season, because I had a lot of thoughts about Mohammed this week, and I think we're going to have to discuss the greater racism of it all at the end. Unless this is all we see of the out, but I feel like Dodi and Mohammed Al-Fayed, critical to the beginning of the season. So we'll talk about that more later. But yeah, like this dude just shows up, and obviously he's shook at the loss of his son, his oldest son. But he's already, like, and I know we're jumping around a little bit in the timeline, he's already putting pieces together to use this as a way to bring him and the royals onto the same page.
Yeah, he says something to the effect of, we are, you know, tied together by tragedy now, like, we're brothers or something, right?
He says, tragedy will bring us together.
Yeah. That he's delusional. I think that's kind of already been established just a little bit. Like, even when he says that line, just based on what we've seen in the show, they're not going to extend any overtures to you. Not like, even if you know history or not, you know he's not going to be brought into the fold. Like, dude, you are viewed as an outsider because that's the crown. They keep it in-house. They didn't even see Diana as part of them. So if you think and they're going to include you, no, bro, it don't go that way.
And he's like, the whole show, he's idolized the West, and we see that in a conversation later in the episode. But this whole thing, it's like, dude, stop, just back off, like, have a little common sense. And that's the thing that I think he's gotten what he's wanted, to the point where he's basically, he didn't bully Dodi into death, but he bullied Dodi. And there's the scene where he's who's he talking to? I think it's the same scene where he's talking about the tragedy will bring us together, where he says to like his assistant, he's like, you know, they were engaged.
Yeah, because they give him that medal, right? The with the engravings on it or whatever.
From the hotel room or whatever, from Diana's room, mm-hmm. the engraved yeah. poem on the mirror thing.
Right, right. That he's like cherishing, which ironically, Diana said like this is trash, and even mm-hmm. you know Dodie was like this is trash too.
But we don't know how much of this is speculation, but something tells me, by the way, he deifies the two of them. In death, that he 1,000% believed that there was an engagement.
And oh, no, so that is true. He was someone who propagated the idea that they were engaged. And there was no one else to really verify this. It was really him pushing that narrative. And yes, there was that ring that was found on Dodie's body, but that didn't necessarily mean it was a wedding or engagement.
Spoiler alert to all the Muhammad Al-Fayeds of the world. If she doesn't have it on her finger, it's not a lock.
Yeah.
As we learned from the fictionalized telling of their engagement, not a lock. No Julio Iglesias.
Right. And this isn't included in the show, but he also pushed forward the notion that MI5 or there was an inside job that was targeting them to get murdered. And there's no veracity.
You wonder why he was denied his citizenship over and over again.
Well, I think that came a little bit after, but yeah, he did make those claims. So, yeah, there you have it. Well,
we could do burn through the Dodie of it all, or we can touch base and Diana and wrap around back. But Dodie doesn't have a whole lot, or Muhammad doesn't have a whole lot.
He's pretty much just putzing around the home and he's feeling bad about himself. And then, voila, there's Dodie in front of him and be like, hey, daddy, you suck.
Yes, which is a mirror of other scenes that happened with Diana and characters. But Muhammad indeed has a discussion with a ghost. The crown has gone into ghost stories.
Yep.
And Dodie tells him, stop idolizing the West.
Yeah.
Because Muhammad's like, what's going on? You know, like, they don't like me.
Yeah, they won't get back to me.
And they don't acknowledge you in these articles. And he says, yeah, but all the Egyptian, you know, all the Middle Eastern press call Dodie a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that enough? Like, why do you need all of these other cultures to tell you you're worthy?
Right. And he says, should know your own worth.
Muhammad says, "Oh, too hard on you." And Dodie's like, "Yep, you stink, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You made me get divorced."
Yeah, like there's no kind of closure for Muhammad in that moment because Dodie. Mm-hmm. And you have to think of it, though, this is Muhammad maybe beating himself up for being too tough on Dodie or controlling. And what is it that Dodie says? He says, wounds will only heal the truth, which I couldn't quite wrap my head around.
Well, basically, he's telling his dad, like, all you do is spin these lies. Like, the only way you're going to get over things is if you accept what's real and what's true. Right.
That's really what he means, is acceptance, what's the truth. And there's even that one moment, though, where Muhammad says, you were perfect, and Dodie says, no, I wasn't. Come on, dude.
And he says that he's perfect in death, but this guy told him to his face that his fiance was trash and that he needed... And then putting the most relevant celebrity in the world on his yacht to try to set his son up against his will, basically... Like, he orchestrated this whole plan that wound up killing his son and Diana. And he's like, oh, no, man, your son was not perfect because, and you tried to make him perfect for you.
Right.
By manipulating the world around him rather than just letting him spread his wings.
Yep.
Not to say he would have been perfect anyway, because as we discussed, he was just handing out drugs on movie sets.
And it goes back to this thing, too, just, you know, taking the lens back away from the show. There's like this idea of like when someone passes, you want to reflect on the positive things, but some people do take it too far where they're like, man, they were the greatest ever at this or that, and it's like, come on, don't change things up now because they're gone. Like, let's be respectful of who they were. And even Dodie knew himself I ain't perfect, bro. Like, come on. Get off Muhammad.
I
want
to make Chariot of Fire too. That's all he wants.
And so what's Muhammad's idea following all this that he mentions in this episode? He wants a bronze statue of him and Diana. And that was a thing. There in 2005 in a Paris store, there was a bronze statue of Dodie and Diana with their hands with a bird. I think it eventually got removed, but yeah.
Tasteless. Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely tasteless. It's like if you went on like 3 dates with somebody, and then your whole narrative of your afterlife is that you're stuck with them.
Yeah. It's like, come on, man. You're stretching it a little bit here.
And we see that he's already tasteless because he unveils the doors of the display panel of his store, and it's giant portraits of the two of them.
Yeah.
You didn't take that photo of Diana. You bought that. Like, you have no connection to this woman aside from a cordial social relationship.
Right. Muhammad, weirdo, ultimate weirdo. that's the way I see him now. Mostly.
Well, he tricked us. He tricked us with his charm and his rise to the top.
He's an Anglophile, but a weirdo Anglophile.
He would be like if the two of us suddenly became like the new Jimmy and Andy in the next Downton Abbey movie. Like, we're so obsessed that we just work our way and we're like, we just got to do it. It would be like if we wind up as Jimmy and Andy in Belgravia the next chapter. We're like, all we want to be is in Downton Abbey. Like, the best we can give you is Belgravia. And we're like, okay. That's Muhammad Al-Fayed trying to get into the royal family. Like, the best you can do is have your son date
Diana.
The prince's ex-wife.
Yeah. that's the best we can do. Well, that's what's going on with the Fayeds. Meanwhile, cut back to the beginning of the episode, we see the hospital and the moment where it's pretty powerful. Like, they cut out all the sound and you just see the doctors reacting to finding out that Diana's gone. Like, obviously, they're the first people to learn of it. And so, yeah, they drop out all the sound. They relay the news back to Mr. Janvrin back at the royal house. And yeah, everyone's just taking the news really, really tough. Like, Prince Charles walks downstairs like, yeah, I heard the news, got to turn on the TV. And he just goes out for a long walk after he gets the news by the water, crying. They really do in this episode, and we'll talk about it as we go through it, but they really do work to humanize Prince Charles in a way that, like, I have never remotely seen in the real world.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, and that's also, the fact that I think Dominic West is a little less cartoonish looking than the real Prince Charles. Like,
sure.
You have this classically trained actor, and not to say that Prince Charles is not a human behind closed doors, but you have the master of his craft who is way more stoic looking when he's at a resting level. So when he gets emotional, it overtakes his body. Whereas I think Charles in real life kind of looks like a doof in a lot of ways, with all due respect to the king. But so if you were to see him bawling, you'd be like, well, it looks like he's a sad doof versus a hunk who's this very handsome, level-headed
feeling
hunk.
Feeling all the emotion. And the other difference too is, because understandably, the Crown is taking you behind the scenes of what they're actually feeling in these moments. But the difference is, when we were doing these earlier seasons, there wasn't a camera always on the Queen, because there wasn't, like, the cameras everywhere as they are now or as they came throughout. So there was more opportunities for her to let her guard down and for us to be like, oh, of course, why this wouldn't be captured. Of course, there would be these moments for her to be like that. But as the cameras became more of a thing, we saw she was very stoic all the time, but you can make the assumption like, okay, she grew into being like that. Whereas with Charles, his whole life, he's been followed by cameras for the most part. This dude has never really let down his guard. So it's even harder
for me.
Yeah,
only when breakdancing. We've never seen him sad. We've seen him silly.
We just see him breakdance. So it's even harder to buy into him giving a little bit with the emotion here, considering how like we just have seen more of him through his entire life, just never really letting people in, at least to see him vulnerable all that much. Mm-hmm. Not to say he's not incapable of being sad or feeling hurt and stuff. It's just it coming from Dominic West, to your point, it hits different. It feels a little bit like, okay, this is too human.
yeah.
That more than I'm used to from Charles.
But Prince Philip is not here for any of this emotional connectivity.
Nope.
She's, and he says she wasn't a royal, divorced. It's like an amputated limb. The queen and Prince Philip lay into Charles and they say, you wanted this divorce. Like, you want to give her royal treatment. And I don't know exactly if I'm going to jump around in this timeline. So yeah, you wanted to amputate that limb from the body and you chose mm-hmm. that. And he's, this is an episode of basically Prince Charles, and I know I just said a lot of disrespectful things about his physical demeanor, but mm-hmm. Prince Charles standing up for what's right and getting it for the most part.
And he has a bit of an awakening because he goes to visit to see her body in Paris, and you know, he breaks down, but when he exits, he hears just silence and people, you know, kind of clapping as like the casket goes by with her body, the hearse goes by with her body there. And so it's really getting through to him like, oh, he knew it, but he feels it now even more than ever, how much she meant to everyone and how they're mm-hmm. feeling. And while we're still in Paris for that brief moment, correction on last week after our back and forth of the timeline of events, they went to the Ritz. They went to the Doty's apartment. They went back to the Ritz. Sorry, folks, for getting it wrong. They went everywhere. It's way too confusing. And so anyways, here, Prince Charles then goes to Doty's apartment. Then he goes back to the Ritz, and then he goes to lunch. No, just kidding.
He gets the PlayStation.
Yeah, he gets the PlayStation.
Crash Bandicoot.
Mm-hmm.
Twisted Metal. Well, not Twisted Metal. That would be appropriate right now.
Yeah, he's getting it for the kids. But anyways, he's flying back to London from Paris.
And he gets a good visit from a ghost.
Yeah. Jacob Marley. Wait, no.
Liz DeBicke,
Diana.
The princess.
Yeah. Ta-da.
And they have a nice conversation.
That was so good the way they played that too. When she just comes in with the ta-da, it's like, whoa, no, it is a ghost. And they have a heart-to-heart. Again, you got to remember it's from the perspective of Charles talking to her, so it's informing a bit of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like him admitting to himself, too, a little bit. Like, they always loved you. You're the one they're all about. Not me, my big old floppy ears.
Yeah, I'm not really Dominic West. This is just who I want to be.
Yeah, exactly. And just, you know, talking about how everyone loved her so much, and him giving himself that moment where he's like, I let you down. Like, you know, I really wasn't the husband you deserved, and now in your death, I'll be the guy to make sure this is done right by you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's really powerful, and she's crying, and he's really selling it too. Like,
it's tough. Definitely. And we also did skip over the part that the morning after they find out, the queen makes them go to church. Mm. Makes the whole family get dressed up for church. Harry and William. And they explicitly tell the minister to not mention the accident.
Yeah.
So like Diana and or Elizabeth and Philip are in like erase mode. This didn't happen. And we see mm-hmm. pretty much from the get-go every time they hear from Tony Blair, who is just a sort of background character in this episode, that he's just like, we got to hit this head on.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
This is a very important thing to the people. And they're like, nope.
Yeah. And it really stands out in contrast from Prince Phil saying, like, we got to do this by the book. And it's like, come on, Prince Phil. Come on, dude.
Well, then is it Charles that makes the point that, you know, they don't want a royal funeral. They don't want to send the whole brigade. This is before he goes to get her. Mm-hmm. And they say, she wasn't royal. She was divorced. And then he says, he puts his foot down. He says, this is the future king's mother.
Yeah.
And would you rather her, like, this the proceedings go on under our guise or with a Herod's bag. Like, she will become part of the Muhammad Al-Fayed story. Like, he will make this 1,000% about what he's doing if we don't take over this. And they're like, okay, we... Elizabeth's, I mean, like, yeah, I am racist towards Muhammad Al-Fayed.
Well, I don't even know if it's racist, but I feel that's informing that's a part little of it. Bit of it. But also, I think they just don't like the guy, and they see
what he's
trying to do. Yeah.
But that's kind of one of many awakenings they have, Elizabeth and Prince Philip.
Yeah. So
at the hand of Charles.
Yeah. And so they're pushing public funeral. It's going to be on Westminster Abbey. Everyone's going to be able to pay their respects. They'll be able, mm-hmm. be able to see it. Only one quick fly in the ointment is that William has ran away. The boy went up the hill. How many hours?
They say 14 hours he's gone.
Oh, come on.
And I like the fact that they're like this teenager. He's not like a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gone. And this is, again, where I think this show didn't even... We didn't need this at all in the episode.
Fact or fiction, Dave? Did this happen?
Oh, boy. This is tough because... It derails the episode for like 3 minutes and there's nothing.
Yeah.
I would say fiction.
You're half right. So, of course, if this went on for 14 hours, this would be a news story. Like it would reach beyond just the house searching for him. 14 hours is a long time for someone to be missing. Yeah. But what it was is them embellishing a quote that Prince Phil said during a call planning the funeral, that our worry at the moment is William. He run away up the hill and we can't find him. That's the only thing we're concerned about with at the moment. And so that's like him kind of like that kind of statement is just something like maybe he's punting on like answering some questions or doing something. He just kind of says that, or it may be true that William went up the hill. They can probably find him. It's not that good. But 14 hours is a total creation for the show and just kind of.
Yeah, the chopper would be out.
Yeah, it's absurd.
And they're like, he's coming back.
Yeah.
And he's walking back. And
all it amounts to is some lovely views of Scotland. And like, man, I should visit there.
Sure.
Yeah.
And we also did skip over, there's a second sort of confrontation about between Elizabeth Philip and Prince Charles, where, you know, Elizabeth wants, like, Charles wants to temper the mood of the world, of the nation. He wants the queen to kind of go out there and make a statement. And she's like, no. I'm staying here with my family in this time to be with my grandkids. And it's like, we haven't seen a shot of you with those kids where you weren't at church. You're not sitting there reading stories to them. You're not in there saying everything's going to be okay. You got staff to do that. You're sitting in your room alone. And then there's another sequence, or is it the same sequence, where Williams comes by with his headphones on.
Oh,
which raises a question. What's the boy listening to on the Walkman?
Chumbawamba. It's got to be.
He's got the chump. You think he's got like Korn playing? He's got some. How old is he at this point?
He's in his teens. Wasn't he born in 82, I believe, or something like that? So he's about 14, 15 at this point.
Oh, he's definitely listening to like, isn't this is 90, 98?
97.
97? He's listening to Korn.
No, it's British. So he's listening to some Oasis, I imagine, Blur. At that time. Some Blur.
He's too angsty. He's 14. He's in his teens. He's angry.
So he's listening to then some Wallflowers and Matchbox 20 and Third Eye Blind. That's Core 97 right there for you.
I could see maybe Blur. He's got some Blur playing.
It's definitely Blur. Or maybe he's listening to some Cure. He goes back to that.
Or some Julio Iglesias or Duran Duran, some actual music that Diana's on the record of liking. While this is happening, we see the big Prince Charles, Queen Elizabeth, Prince Philip conversation going on. Mm-hmm. And William is overhearing. I thought this was a really good thing to portray on screen because he sees that, you know, basically Charles is saying we need to treat this with respect and dignity, and they're like no, she wasn't a royal. More a talk about the amputation kind of stuff, and Charles is like, this is how it has to be. He says, I let her down in life and I won't let her down in death. And you know, we have a public life and we have a private life, and why is the public life the stoic life? You know, he's just going off, and then you see William kind of gets angry, but at the same time you can see my dad's on my side. Grandma and grandpa are not.
Right.
Which is, again, to say, you know, you're not taking care of them kids.
Yeah.
You're not cooking for them.
As you're getting at, too, he has that whole speech, too, Prince Charles, where he's saying, like, she's not a mother. She didn't mother me. She's
Princess Anne. Great scene.
Right. She's just not in the picture at all. And now the country needs her to be a mother, and she's given up on that kind of duty again. She just can't do it. Which all leads to him confronting Queen Elizabeth and telling her, you know, they need love. They need, you know, reassurance. They, like, need you right now. Like, come on. Like, do your job here. Which I think gets through to her a little bit, you know?
And then she also gets visited by the ghost of the princess. And
Diana's leaning in, too. She's, like, sniffing her.
Like, what's up? I'm back.
Yeah. Musty.
And then the queen says, you finally flipped this house on its head.
Mm-hmm.
And Diana's like, of course, make it about yourself. Again, right now. Can't be nice. Yeah. But their conversation is a little less, you know, hitting home than the Charles and the Dodi and Mohammed one. Because, again, I think the queen has hardened in her age. She's endured a lot of emotional trauma over her years. I think that Philip running around banging whatever woman in whatever island with his buddy Mike, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The Diana drama, like, she's been through a lot, being forced to be the queen at, like, 20 years old or whatever. She's had a life, and it hasn't been easy. In this day and age, we would really hope that she was seeing a therapist, but we know it's the late 90s, probably not happening with a woman her age. But
by the way, you have something to say?
What do you got?
No, I looked it up. Prince Harry, not Prince Harry, William. He likes to listen to Tina Turner's "The Best," simply "The Best," because that was one of Princess Di's favorite songs.
I wasn't listening to that day.
I don't know, man. He also
might have been listening to Jerky Boys or something to try to lighten the mood. Weird Al.
He's also a fan of rock music, Prince William, and he has cited Coldplay and Linkin Park.
Linkin Park tracks with Korn.
Yeah, Linkin Park was not in 97 yet, but and neither was Coldplay. Korn? So it's some new metal, adjacent type stuff, maybe. Who knows?
Or Blur.
Maybe he was listening to Take That or something. Watch you back. Anyways, they gotta
the
go.
Queen
do
goes
this
to
whole...
lunch. She has a little conversation with Diana. Less confrontational, more of a, you know, we never got on too great, huh? Conversation. And then she tells Philip, we're going to London tomorrow. We gotta handle this.
And the reaction
like,
of the
like,
principal.
What?
Yeah, his face is like, oh, come on.
She's like, I'm on vacation, man. They divorced.
Yeah. She gives her speech, you know, to heal the nation, to say, like, you know, this is some tough times, yada, yada. And, you know, Princess Di taught us to be, well, she doesn't say what Diana said, or Diana tells her, you taught us to be British. It's something to that effect, you know. It's like, so she's like, kind of speaking similar words to the effect to everyone, like, you know, she reminded us to be whatever. I can't sum up what she said, but it meant a lot.
It seems appropriately disingenuous for the queen. And
it's, I think the thing is the fact that she acknowledged it was the important factor. Cause like the silence was deafening. I mean, that's the whole plot of the movie, The Queen, is her being silent on the subject. So like, just her saying anything is what matters.
Yeah. I guess the saying what she said, you know, like, I know, okay, she said something, but it didn't. I think that stoic Queen Elizabeth did not. She should have been showing some emotion. You know, we should have seen a little more from her.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think you're asking a bit much for the Queen, Dave. But
sure. I don't. That's fine.
Yeah. We see Phil walking next to William during the whole thing, the procession, the funeral. And William's like, man, these people are crying a lot. And Phil says, they're not crying. I mean, he's like, and William says, they didn't even know her. And he says, they're not crying for her. They're crying for you, brother. You're going to be the king
grand
one day.
Grand boy.
Yeah.
Well, this was an interesting scene because as they're walking, we see that Philip is like kind of giving them military school instructions.
Yeah.
He's like, left, right, head down, don't look to the left and the right. And at first I was like, man, this guy's being a real a-hole right now. Like, and I had a very stoic grandfather that would kind of tell you to keep your chin up and how to react in a situation like, you know, a funeral or something. So in my head, I'm like, man, I always hated that. Like, be nice for a little bit. And then Philip says that comment, and it's like, oh, he's really just trying. This is his coping mechanism. He's going back to his old military school days of, like, march, eyes forward. And then when they needs to get a little emotional, he's like, well, these are the facts. You know, he's not crying. He's not emoting. He's just like, this is what's going on, boy. Get used to it.
Yeah, he's keeping him in line. By the way, William also listened to a lot of Chemical Brothers. He has a soft spot for them. So maybe he's listened to the block rock and beat. Who knows? Just getting lost in deep house music from the 90s of the UK scene.
Running around Balmoral Castle in Scotland.
Yep. But that's the episode pretty much, right? I mean...
Yeah. It's short. I mean, 52 minutes, but it flies by.
Now, contrast this with the movie The Queen, which is a full two-hour movie that covers a lot of the same ground. Dave, can you remember back in your mind to that movie from 2006?
I remember the experience of going to the theater more than I remember the movie.
Yeah, we walked around the mall afterwards, like shopping in Macy's, being like, what did we just watch?
Yeah, like, we're definitely not the right on. I think that was, I think, because we went... this is an ironic to say this now. Didn't we go with our friend Chris? Was he?
Yeah, we did. We did. And I remember that really was watch that many movies.
Well, at the time we were like, it's got a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a no brainer.
It was like the highest reviewed movie like in years to appear on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, it's like universal. Like, you, this is a good movie. Everyone agrees it's a good movie, and we saw it and it was a good movie. But it also made us think we're not the audience for this. Actually,
yeah, and that was one of the first times where a movie had like 100 on Rotten Tomatoes, and I was like, maybe I don't need to go by those numbers anymore.
Yeah, because I felt nothing. and not to say that they didn't do a good job with the acting and the presentation of all the movie. It was just a story that we could not connect to on an emotional level.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, why do we care about the Queen? We don't know that much. Now we do. We've definitely watched all The Crown. We do, but like at the time, it's like, well, we have no connection to her. But the one thing that stands out about that movie that I recall is she looks a lot at those innocent deer getting hunted and seeing, because they've spent so much time in that movie lingering on that. And that's the one thing I remember. But the movie also features a lot more Tony Blair. He's a much heavier voice in that movie. And they make a big point of how popular he is and, you know, carries a lot of sway. And so the thing that they've changed from that movie, or at least Peter Morgan, the writer, has for the show is, in the movie, it's more Tony Blair saying, like, yo, this is really important that you show up, Queen. Like, they are going to resent you and reject you if you don't speak out. And it is true that Prince Charles was a big push, did give a big push to have Diana's wedding be, funeral be public and everyone pay their respects. But Tony Blair was definitely a bigger influence, or not bigger, but just as big of an influence, at least, in terms of saying, like, No, you have to say something, Queen. And that's what they got right in the movie. In the TV show, they comported it to be more Prince Charles, and it just seems like, I don't know, either Peter Morgan's sympathies have shifted to that of Prince Charles to be more understanding of him, or it just plays better with a show like this that's more about the royals and everything, so maybe have Tony Blair be less of a focus and keep it on the royal family, so it all is just staying consistent with it being about the crown itself. But yeah, interesting point of comparison between the two of them. I don't know if we should ever go back to that movie.
It's funny because now that I'm saying what we just said about our story of seeing it, about how, oh boy, we really, the movie was not for us. I think at this point in time, the movie's for us. I mean, we're adults who can wrap our head around history, who can wrap our head around deep human traumatic emotion, versus when we were teenagers.
We're literally twice the age as when we saw that movie, pretty much.
Yeah,
close to twice the age.
I mean, we talked about doing it on Patreon. I'm unopposed. I would do it.
Yeah, yeah, I can give it a crack.
I don't know if I don't know when I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, the Spencer movie's out there too. I know, and we're busy. We got a lot going on. But yeah, they do have that scene in the movie that Imelda Staunton does here where she gives a speech. They both recreate that speech verbatim, so we could cross and compare that at least with the real Queen speech. Solid week on The Crown. They did what they had to do.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
It's not a real act, you know, like, we don't really deal with shows that have, like, entire Aftermath episodes. And then this episode is entitled Aftermath.
Yeah.
So there's not too many, like, post-big event episodes where, like, instead there's no action. There's just reflection. Yeah. And this episode is all reflection and decision-making, planning.
And next week is post-post-math, I think. Something. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We do have power rankings, though.
Yes.
And this was a difficult week to do the power rankings. There's just not enough
not
going on.
Not a lot going on. Who do you got going down? You want to start us off?
Sure. I got the concept of running away going down at number 3.
Okay. It's been a while since we had a good old concept in here.
William tries to get away. He doesn't. He's gone for 14 hours. But it's like, where are you going to go in Balmoral, dude? Where are you going to run away to? Is it Balmoral? I don't know. Well, Scotland
at
least.
Yeah.
It's like, where are you going to go, dude? You're just going to run in the hills? Like, think this through, William. Come on, man. So I don't know about that.
All right. Well, speaking of that, I got Harry and William at number 3 going down.
Sure.
Because these kids are, like, the ones that are most effective, and they're basically played as pawns.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that we're not going to London, we need to stay with our grandkids and do what? You're not doing nothing. You're there for yourself.
Yeah. Yep. That is true. I didn't actually think about them. I always forget about the kids. Because number 2, I got the country of England. They're all in mourning.
Whoa, okay.
It's hard times for them, man. Like, they lost their princess of the people. So... yeah, I feel for the England itself, and they were number 2 this week.
Okay. Well, at number 2, I got the Queen. I know at the end of the episode, we got her speech, and that was so important that she made a comment. But the rest of the episode, not great. Not a great look. Because thing that I kept thinking of with Prince Philip being kind of a jerk is this is not his God-bestowed thing. He married into this. The Queen, she is God's vessel for monarchy. And she's the one just sitting there going, yeah, no, I don't think so. And I don't think so until everyone around her basically forces her. So whatever you say positive about what she said, I think the negatives of this episode stink her up enough for me.
Yeah. Well, number 1 going down, though, I think it's pretty clear, though. It's Mohammed.
That's Mohammed Al-Fayed. What a historic rise and fall in the point of view of the Lords of Grantham. I bet all the people that were aware of what was going on at the time probably like, he stinks. Why do they keep putting him number 1 on the power rankings?
Right.
We hate this
guy. You
guys
got to knock it off.
And here we are, eating our words.
Can't help it.
Really made it about himself. Made it a carnival show.
And straight to the dumpster for Mohammed.
Yeah, see ya.
What do I want to be?
I hope we don't.
Yeah, I hope we don't either. Okay,
up was tough. Who do you got going up? Or did
you
start
go up?
The last one? I had to name drop him because he's barely in the episode. But Tony Blair is number 3. This guy was right all along. He told you.
He
go
has
to
some
London.
Good points.
We got to handle this. You need to handle this in the public, and they're like, no. Shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. And nope.
Well, I got the Queen. I mean, for the fact that she gives that speech by the end, it shows some level of her like realizing, okay, I need to do my job just a little bit here.
Okay. That's what I was torn because the whole episode, I'm like, I hate her so much right now. She's being such a, so like evil about this thing. And the end comes along, and they're like, all right, it's not as bad. But then I just spent so much time. It wasn't a baby face turn. It was like a mandatory good move turn. So I understand why she's going up.
Yeah.
Well, at number two, going up, I got from Beyond the Grave, Princess Diana. She comes in, and we talked about DeBicki earning that Emmy, or whatever it is she won. Mm-hmm. Golden Globe, I don't even remember.
Yeah.
She's a powerhouse here, and Diana comes in and makes things sort of as appropriate and as right as they need to be with Charles and the Queen. Mm-hmm. And the whole world is mourning her. Like, they're not... She's changed the world.
Yeah. No, it's really true. Well, I got Charles number two. This is a guy who, like, puts on his big boy britches and realizes this is the time to, like, you know, pay some respect to Diana, do what I gotta do.
And a good dad. He's the one being a good dad.
Yeah, he's the one letting the kids know. He's the one who says, like, give him a night, you know, or give him till the morning, just a little bit more time with their mother being alive. And so, yeah, kudos to him for pushing on the Queen in this episode to be like, no, we got to do this in public. We got to let this thing happen. Come on now.
And that's why I got Charles at number one. This is a great week.
I got Diane at number one. Whoa, she's the one she's in their minds, dude. She shows up to the Queen in her brain, too. Like, they can't shake Diana. She's the specter haunting them all. And she gets one over because they wouldn't have done this for anyone else. It's because the crowd loved her so much. If this was Camilla suddenly passing before she finally married Charles, they wouldn't have done it for her. So, not the mother of the child of the future king, but still. Rest in power. She even got a bronze statue that she didn't ask for with Dodie.
Yeah, yippee. Yahoo.
There you go. Rest in peace to all.
R.I.P. Diana. Nice having you around.
And Dodie too.
Dodie, yeah.
I felt for the guy hearing that. Oh, he immediately died. It's like, oh, geez. Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah.
Tough breaks. But yeah, that's this week on The Crown. And we'll pick back up next week. Next week, I hear, is where it starts to turn. This is like from what I've read, the season peaks with these first four episodes, and then it kind of
goes down.
Because they don't know where to go in terms of the story. It sounds like, I don't know.
Okay,
we'll see for ourselves.
We will.
But Dave, you went to the Big Easy. You went to New Orleans.
The Big Easy. That's right.
How was it? How did you like it?
Well, it was fun. It was good. Okay. Here's the thing that I did not expect. Because
what do you
get all these stories about New Orleans. They don't tell you it's like 85% Manhattan and then 15% this really cool small skyline, old-timey city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We got to our hotel and I'm like, these are skyscrapers. The French Quarter's like less than a football field away from where we stayed. And it's just like, I was in awe of the fact. I mean, obviously I knew it was a city, but I didn't know it was like a metropolis that way. So kind of took my head out of it. But then you walk
to
a mile or whatever, and you get through the French Quarter to the Mississippi River. And I, for some reason, I didn't put two and two together in my head that the Mississippi River crosses directly through New Orleans. And I was like, oh my God, I never.
So you went to the bayou. Care.
Yeah, I mean, not really in the bayou. I did go to a swamp.
Oh, okay.
It was not there. But, I mean, the French Quarter, everyone says, well, Bourbon Street was awful. I'm too old for Bourbon Street.
You don't like live music in your face?
The live music was fine. The people and the trashy bars, it felt like the Jersey Shore.
Sure. Well, you went on a weekend t-shirts. Too, right?
It was also a giant free festival.
Yeah.
So
Giant free festival. What does that mean? Like there's no giants walking around?
No, it was a giant festival that was through like four stages that had no admission costs. It was free.
Oh, okay.
So all these people were just coming and going and coming and going. So Saturday and Sunday in the French Quarter were insane.
Yeah.
But then Monday was night. But still, Monday night, it's like I just want to go.
You're tired.
Get a nice drink. And then you walk by all the bars are like, come get a 64-ounce Fleur de Lis filled with sugar and tequila. It's like, okay, I think I just want to.
It's Monday.
Too old for this. But that was the Frenchman Street, where all the music was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
walked around to the
Frenchman
ghost store.
Is what I'm thinking of. The Frenchman Street is, yeah, because I got that confused with Bourbon Street. Frenchman Street is, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. I say with all the music.
Frenchman Street was great. The ghost tour I did, and I'll plug it in case anyone's going to New Orleans, because it's not a huge company. It's called Hottest Hell Tours. It was incredible. And it was like a highlight of the trip. We had this really nice tour guy named Jeremy. And they kept saying, like, oh, you know, like, all of our reviews matter. Like, it's very clearly they're passionate about this job.
Yeah.
Excellent tour of New Orleans and...
Okay.
Wild. Some really, really crazy stuff went on down there.
During the ghost tour?
Well, not... I mean, the stories they told of the ghosts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the French people and everything.
And then the Irish people and then Italian people. Like,
yeah.
And that the freed slaves and the...
Yeah.
Enslaved people, like, it was rough.
It's a lot. And that's the thing about the French Quarter, at least, is you do feel the history of those buildings. Like, it does feel transportive, like, oh, you're somewhere else.
And I think that's the kind of thing about Bourbon Street that really put me off, was that all of these bars are, like, so rich with history that, like, why are you selling some screen-printed shirt with, like, Thing 1 and Thing 2 from Dr. Seuss on it? Like...
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Right. You have your own history to rely on. I remember when me and some of our friends went there back in 2017, and within like 2 hours, one of our friends who loves to travel the world said, "This is my favorite place I've ever been to in America." And it's like, dude, we've only been here 2 hours. And it was like at nighttime. So like cut to the next day where it's like totally not that like historic feeling. Mm-hmm. And it's like, are you sure this is your favorite place you've ever been in America?
Yeah, it's like vomit on the...
Well, that was all it.
People really trying to give you the bracelets and the beads and the shine.
Oh,
I almost got caught by a shoe shine guy. He's like, I'm wearing $30 New Balance sneakers from Amazon. Like, what are you trying to shine my shoes for?
I don't know. He's trying to give you some shiny shoes.
Hustle me.
Well, Dave, did you have any highlights in terms of food or drink?
Oh, man. That was one of the perks of this festival, is that every stage had like 20 food vendors of all local restaurants.
Yeah.
I had these spring rolls that were duck and brie cheese in a spring roll.
Oh,
broke my brain.
Lord.
It was so good. I had alligator, amazing. Shrimp, cheesecake.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had...
Was it good?
It was more savory. So I was expecting a little more sweet, but you got a little gator in there. It has to be a little savory. And then I had a good po' boy. There's only so much you can eat. Yeah, shrimp po' boy. Mm. It was like... falling out the shrimp. So yeah, I mean,
some buffalo lettuce.
Great food city. Definitely the best. And the coffee game in New Orleans is the best. Like the Cafe du Monde is the most touristy place.
Yeah.
Beignets were great. Coffee was just like hit the spot. I was in heaven.
That is the sneaky thing. They are, well, I don't drink coffee, but they are very well known for their coffee. You can get it in stores too.
I did.
Okay. Yeah, their beignets, and the fact that they're open like late at night too is like, oh my God, just to die for. Love it.
Yeah, and I tried beignets from another place too. Cafe Beignet, which is right by my hotel. Because I tried to get coffee from French Truck Coffee, but it closed at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
And my girlfriend was on a Zoom meeting, and she's like, yeah, go grab a cup of coffee. By the time you're back, I'll be done. And it was like 3:02. And they were closed. Yeah. And there was a Cafe Beignet, like a stone's throw away. I said, I'll try that. While I'm here, we got a comparison shop and test this beignet. Not as good as Dumont. So
okay. Good to know. And was it hot when you were there? How
it was
hot
was it? The low 80s.
Okay. So you weren't fanning yourself.
No, I wasn't fanning myself. And when we were on the swamp, it was very breezy. You know, you're on the water.
Yeah.
The gators are nipping at the boat.
As they do.
Yeah.
As I want to do.
But a very, very interesting... I don't think I need to go back, but I had a great time.
I think the thing about New Orleans is it's better in a group setting because everyone's just down to eat and drink and just party.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? Do you watch anything good?
I consumed all 8 hours of the OJ Made in America documentary over the weekend. the one from 2016,
another
that won Best Documentary.
Iconic 90s figure who is...
Yeah, fast. I mean... He passed away last week, and like he's always been a fascinating figure because we all were alive and aware of what was going on in the 90s. Like, this guy killed people and is getting away with it, it seems. Mm-hmm. But watching this documentary, like, they really fill it all in. And I also watched years ago, the American Crime Story, People versus OJ.
Yeah.
And it covered a lot of the same ground, but this is like really in depth in terms of like all the racial and American, like the state of the nation at the time with like Rodney King. and all the LAPD being trash, informing the narrative of how he got off and innocent or found innocent in that trial. But mm-hmm. like, my Lord, that guy was, he was up to something, that OJ.
Oh yeah.
Crazy as can be. Incredible watch though. And apparently it's all on Netflix. I watched it on ESPN.
Yeah.
Could not turn away. It was so gripping. Incredible stuff.
I went to a place called the Museum of Death in New Orleans, which was a tourist trap that was disgusting, and I would not recommend it.
Okay.
Because it's not about New Orleans at all. It's just about, it's basically like a true crime podcast and museum. Ugh. And they had like a little whole section about OJ, and they had like photos of the bodies, and it was disgusting. Mm-hmm. So,
oh yeah, I mean, the documentary shows what happened to the bodies, and it's like, I didn't need to see that, but
slit. I don't need bloody throats. Like,
yeah,
it was gross.
He's a bad dude. Yeah, really good watch. And so, yeah,
you think he did it? Where we,
yeah, and oh yes, absolutely. That guy is guilty as can be. The shoe print matched a bloodstained shoe there. Like, it's like, the fact that he was found guilty of being for libel, like 2 years later, not guilty, but like he had to pay the families or was going to have to pay the families because he was more than 50% likely to have done it. It's like, mm-hmm. come on, dude. By the way, Dave, you didn't want to go see the World War II Museum down in New Orleans? I know they advertise that a lot.
The one museum because we did this Museum of Death tour, and I do not recommend it. Because mm-hmm. it was short and it was gross and there was no theming. Yeah. You go to New Orleans, you think Museum of Death is going to be like voodoo and, you know, the revolution stuff. No, it's just straight up John Wayne Gacy, Charles Manson, mm-hmm. O.J. Simpson, Kevorkian. It's it's like a true crime podcast in two rooms. It's disgusting. Yeah. So then we told our tour guide and he goes, oh no, that place stinks. And he told us to go to the Museum of the Pharmacy Museum, apparently is an incredible museum about mm-hmm. the history of medicine in the United States and how you used to be able to go to a doctor and get like mm-hmm. heroin and cocaine and stuff like that. And he says it's a trip to be in this museum, the pharmacy one. So,
okay. You know, I mean,
I wouldn't go kicking and screaming back to New Orleans. I would walk back to New Orleans. Well, walk to the plane, get back on to experience.
Get on a boat, go down the Mississippi River to get there.
Absolutely. R.I.P. O.J. and Diana and all that.
No, not R.I.P. O.J. That guy does not deserve R.I.P.
Don't rest in something else.
Yeah, exactly. So that was enough about our everything else but the Crown for the past 10 minutes or so. Hope y'all enjoyed that. And if you're still listening, find us on iTunes or Spotify. Give us a 5-star rating or review if you so choose. You can find all our stuff on there, including our Podbean website. You can mm-hmm. hit us up at lordsgrantham@gmail.com. Find us Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, X. Did I already just say that? And yeah, our Patreon has bonus content too if you want to find that there. Otherwise, we will catch you next time on the pod.